This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Good evening and welcome to Africa News Tonight from the English to Africa service of the Voice of America. Your source for Pan-African news and world developments, I'm Kim Lewis in Washington, and coming up on Africa News Tonight.
Oftentimes, it's assumed that the United States supports opposition candidates in all of these African elections. The absolute truth is, and I can't underline this strongly enough, that the United States has no candidates in any election.
That's U.S. Assistant Secretary of State for African Affairs Tibor Nagy in an interview at the U.N. General Assembly in New York. We'll have more on this interview coming up. Also, the U.N. warns escalating human rights violations will threaten the credibility of presidential elections in the DRC. Officials in Mali say at least 15 members of an ethnic Tuareg community died when an armed man from a rival ethnic group attacked their compound. And the WHO warns a perfect storm could allow the Ebola outbreak in the DRC to spread. We'll have these stories and more all ahead on Africa News Tonight. The United Nations General Assembly continues its annual meeting today with addresses from a number of African leaders, including those from Ghana, Kenya, Angola, South Africa, Liberia, Zimbabwe, and Uganda. Yesterday, Paul Kagame, the Rwandan president and chair of the African Union, spoke about the economic and political progress made by Africa in recent years.
Earlier this year, the historic Continental Free Trade Area was signed, which was the culmination of decades of effort, and once enforced, Africa's place in the global economic and trade architecture will be redefined. Economies of scale and higher level of intra-African trade will help our continent attain the Sustainable Development Goals by 2030. The momentous developments in the Horn of Africa, Ethiopia, Eritrea, Djibouti, and even Somalia are the most remarkable. The region's leaders deserve our full support as they set aside decades of mistrust and work toward a comprehensive settlement. However, there are other situations in Africa, notably the Central African Republic, Libya, the Sahel, and South Sudan, where serious problems remain unresolved despite so much potential.
Kagame urged the Security Council to continue monitoring political progress made in the Horn of Africa and to help end tensions in conflict areas across the continent. He also said the three African representatives at the Council would soon present a resolution asking delegates to reduce imbalances of power at the UN. Also today, President Donald Trump chairs a UN Security Council meeting focusing on Iran's influence in the Middle East and the non-proliferation of weapons of mass destruction. The meeting comes a day after he addressed the General Assembly and urged world leaders to isolate Iran, which he accused of spreading chaos across the Middle East and beyond. The United States' new top diplomat for Africa says recent changes in Zimbabwe and Angola serve as proof of what enlightened leadership can accomplish. U.S. Assistant Secretary of State for African Affairs Tibor Nagy is the former ambassador to Ethiopia and Guinea. He's also held several diplomatic posts in southern and West Africa. Our colleague Haiti Adams Fitzpatrick sat down with him in New York to talk about the future of America's relationship with Africa. She began by asking him whether the U.S. is satisfied with developments in the DRC ahead of the elections there in December.
Oftentimes, it's assumed that the United States supports opposition candidates in all of these African elections. The absolute truth is, and I can't underline this strongly enough, that the United States has no candidates in any election. Our only candidate is always the process, as long as the process is fair, transparent, and the elections are credible. This is what we would like to see. I think this is what most of the international community would very much like to see, that the people of the DRC have a choice, a real choice, in electing their next leader.
Are you happy with what you're seeing so far?
Let me put it this way. I have gone from being pessimistic to being more agnostic. Oftentimes, unfortunately, people are focused on the day of the elections. And often the day of the elections go off fine, but the pre-electoral period is critically important to make sure that all eligible voters are allowed and have a chance to register. And, of course, in the post-electoral period as to how that unfolds and to make sure that the right person is inaugurated who was elected by the people.
Let's move now to Zimbabwe, where we have actually had an election, and we have seen the transfer of power from one individual to another, albeit within the same party. The United States, along with the international community, were instrumental in, really, through international sanctions, isolating Robert Mugabe's Zimbabwe. It seems that change appears to be on the horizon. So what is the United States willing now to do to help rebuild Zimbabwe and help it reintegrate into the family of prosperous nations?
We sure hope that change is, real change is on the horizon, because the fact is that Zimbabwe could be one of the stars of Africa. There's almost not a sector that Zimbabwe could not excel at. What is key now is real action. The legislation and sanctions against Zimbabwe are quite specific and also specific in what needs to be done to, again, open up that space. If these steps come into being, then I would become a huge cheerleader with the U.S. business sector to say, absolutely, you know, this has happened now, so look at Zimbabwe as a possibility for investment, because at the end of the day, it's not going to be any amount of international development assistance that will move a country from, you know, low-income developing to middle-income. It's going to be foreign direct investment. We see that over and over again, you know, throughout the world, because there's massive amounts of international capital looking for good places to invest. But for that, the business community needs transparency. They need to know that it's a corruption-free environment and that they can get a fair return on their investment.
Speaking of more change, almost sort of the same that we're seeing in Zimbabwe, another example of transfer of power from one individual to another within the same party in Angola. President Dos Santos virtually handpicked João Lourenço, and he's been on a rather aggressive anti-corruption drive. Is there a pathfinder here? Is there a lesson for the rest of Africa?
Absolutely. And that shows you the difference, literally, that one leader can make, because the Angolans have taken some steps, you know, especially on the corruption front. And if investors are very sophisticated, especially those investors who are looking at developing markets like Africa. If the investors are beating down the door to go to a country, that is definitely a very positive signal. Whether it's a new leader who takes these steps or somebody who's been in the system for a long time, when they're taking proven positive steps, as has happened, Angola's one of the examples, then the business community responds immediately. You know, formalized organizations, whether it's a government or other large organizations, may take time. But for the business community, you know, responding quickly is their lifeblood. So it's a very good indication of the positive changes going on in Angola.
That was Ambassador Tibor Nagy, the U.S. Assistant Secretary of State for African Affairs. He was speaking with VOA's Haiti Adams Fitzpatrick during the annual United Nations General Assembly events. Egyptian President Abdel Fattah al-Sisi used his address to the UN General Assembly to blame the organization for failing to solve major international conflicts. From Washington, reporter Mohammed El-Shanawi has the story.
Despite the efforts of the UN in numerous conflicts, including South Sudan, the Central African Republic, and Mali, Egyptian President Sisi said it has fallen short of finding permanent settlements in those and other wars. He reminded the United Nations of the failure of last year's action plan on Libya. He He said now there must be a renewal of the commitment to a comprehensive political solution as set forth in the UN Action Plan if there is to be a halt to the loss of life, the depletion of Libya's resources, and move toward the reconstruction phase. President Sisi told the UN General Assembly that a crisis of such magnitude, whether in Libya or Syria or Yemen, requires comprehensive and not partial solutions. Sisi also called for the recognition of a Palestinian state.
القضية الفلسطينية التي تقف دليلا على عجز النظام الدولي عن إيجاد الحل العادل.
He said the Palestinian problem stands as a perfect example of the failure of the international system to find a just solution to the conflict based on international legitimacy that guarantees the establishment of a Palestinian state with East Jerusalem as its capital. He emphasized the importance of supporting the concept of the nation-state to prevent the spread of terrorism, illegal immigration, and organized crime. Sisi said the Egyptian people have made tremendous effort to restore their state and chose the nation-state as their vehicle to achieve their aspirations for development and dignity. Sisi called for the need to deal fairly with human rights, including economic, social, and cultural rights. However, some of the president's critics have pointed out what they described as violations of human rights in Egypt. Michael Hanna is a senior fellow at the Century Foundation in the U.S.
This is a regime that has arrested tens of thousands of people. We see this kind of political repression, which is very clearly a human rights violation. The legal system has become an important tool for repression and squelching the possibilities of any kind or form of dissent or opposition.
However, the Egyptian National Council for Human Rights denies reports of political detainees in Egypt. The council's head has said that all measures related to arresting and apprehending suspects are done through the general prosecution and the judicial system. Mohammed Al-Shinawi, VOA News, Washington.
You're listening to Africa News Tonight live on the following frequencies, 15, 580, and 6080 kilohertz on the Voice of America. I'm Kim Lewis in Washington. Coming up on 18 minutes past the hour, here's a recap of our top stories. The United States' new top diplomat for Africa says recent changes in Zimbabwe and Angola serve as proof of what enlightened leadership can accomplish. And Egyptian President Abdel Fattah al-Sisi used his address to the UN General Assembly to blame the organization for failing to solve major international conflicts. For more news and information, visit our website at voaafrica.com. Joseph Kabila, the departing president of the DRC, yesterday promised at the UN General Assembly that his country's elections this year will be peaceful and fair. Today, however, the UN Human Rights Council warns escalating human rights violations and restrictions to civil and political rights call into question the credibility of the vote. Lisa Schlein reports for VOA from Geneva, where the Rights Council held a special session on the situation in the DRC.
The United Nations report highlights alarming trends of violations and repressive measures against people's freedom of expression and peaceful assembly since June 2017. Just 3 months ahead of crucial presidential elections in the Democratic Republic of Congo, the Office of the High Commissioner for Human Rights notes a 35% increase in human rights violations. These are linked to restrictions of democratic space, half perpetrated by the police. The agency's director of field operations and technical cooperation, Georgette Gagnon, says demonstrations are being forcibly suppressed. She says opposition leaders, human rights defenders, journalists, and activists are being threatened and intimidated. She notes all these violations are occurring in a persistent climate of widespread impunity.
The essence of a democratic society resides in the ability of its citizens, irrespective of their political affiliation, to enjoy the rights and freedoms without fearing reprisals from the state. Respect for human rights is one of the cornerstones which will determine the credibility of these forthcoming elections.
Gagnon warns the human rights situation in the DRC is likely to worsen as the elections approach. She is calling on the government to reverse these worrying trends. DRC Minister of Human Rights Marie-Ange Mushabekwa-Likulia agrees her country must make more efforts to protect human rights. But she says much progress has been made. She says elections on December 23rd will be free, credible, transparent, and without outside interference, adding that restrictions on public protests were lifted for all political parties 3 months ago. She notes for the first time since the Democratic Republic of Congo gained its independence 58 years ago, the government will be democratically handing over power. She calls this a historic achievement. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
Officials in Mali today said at least 15 members of an ethnic Tuareg community died when armed men from a rival ethnic group attacked their compound. Reports say gunmen attacked on motorcycles yesterday in the Menaka region near the Niger border. Officials did not identify the attackers. There are concerns the attack could inflame ethnic tensions in the area, where different groups often fight over water and grazing rights. Those disputes have been complicated in the past few years by Islamist militants who use ethnic division to recruit members. Also today, 8 soldiers in Burkina Faso died when their vehicle hit a roadside bomb. On Sunday, suspected Islamic extremists kidnapped 3 gold mine employees and 3 security officers died in that attack. No claim of responsibility has been made in either attack in Burkina Faso. Well, classic books like Treasure Island and Hollywood blockbusters like Pirates of the Caribbean often compelling, even romantic images of pirates and their deeds. However, real-life piracy is anything but romantic for its victims. VOA's Adam Phillips interviewed journalist Michael Scott Moore, author of The Desert and the Sea, which chronicles his nearly 3 years of captivity by Somali pirates.
In 2011, after covering a historic trial of 10 Somali pirates in Germany, journalist Michael Scott Moore traveled to Somalia to research the root causes of piracy and perhaps profile its current actors. However, in January 2012, as he was concluding his research and preparing to depart, members of the clan he had hired to protect him arranged for his kidnapping.
I was certainly betrayed. There was a very detailed plot.
His captors beat him, breaking his wrist and smashing his glasses. Thus began 977 days of captivity with a demand for $20 million in ransom. Moore lived in constant fear.
Even if Somali pirates don't tend to kill their hostages, I knew more than one incident where people had died of neglect, disease, or just being shot by accident. I went through memories in my mind in slow motion. You know, the cliche of having someone's life pass before their eyes just before they die. That's what I was going through. It was almost a way of hanging on to who I was.
Moore's book is rich in details, from the layout of the grimy safe houses and the offshore vessel where he was held to the pictures he paints of fellow hostages. He also includes chilling accounts of conversations with his armed guards.
You know, to avoid getting shot, you have to avoid startling them or scaring them. But you don't have to crawl just because they've got weapons. There is a space between that obsequiousness that might be your first impulse and the vengeance that you actually want to inflict. I mean, that sense of vengeance certainly didn't go away until I changed my mindset.
What was that mindset change?
At least 2 years in, maybe a bit longer, I learned how to forgive my guards. I mean, I was living in a state of resentment for a long time, and that was a really powerful source of stress every morning. If I had not made a conscious decision to forgive them, I would have picked up a gun at some point.
And shot yourself or shot them?
The effect would have been both.
Do you see any glimmer of kindness among the pirates?
There was kindness, absolutely. Some guards made a point of not being cruel to me, and I noticed that. So you have to be true to that, too, when you write about it. Most of the guys I met were certainly poor. They were doing what they did because they had no jobs. The more hardened bosses had a real element of evil.
Moore's captors were unaware of the U.S. government's official policy not to pay ransom. In his book, he recalls the fury of one of his guards when he found out.
I had to explain it to him. You know, I think that's definitely how most pirates thought and think. Most young pirates think of it as a way to get rich quick, and it's not true for all of them by any means.
What about in your case? Did your captors hit it rich?
I think the guards probably got a certain bundle of money, each one of them, but not as much as the bosses.
Moore once attempted to escape without success and thought increasingly of suicide. But after nearly 3 years, Moore's 72-year-old mother managed to raise $1.6 million from friends, journalist groups, and NGOs, and the ransom was paid. Suddenly, one morning, he was told to pack his things. He was driven deep into the bush, where he was handed off several times to various intermediaries.
Then someone drove me to the Galkayo airport, and there was a Cessna waiting for me.
Moore recalls feeling merely dazed at first, not joyful.
By that point, I had learned not to hope for anything. Disappointment followed all the time, and it was worse than before. That was extremely bad for my mental state.
Would you repeat this experience in a million years?
No way. I think I've got an interesting, useful book out of it, but no story is worth your life, and I never take for granted that I'm okay.
Incidents of piracy and kidnapping have diminished considerably in Somalia since their peak in 2012, when Michael Scott Moore was captured. However, they are on the increase in West Africa, especially Nigeria. Adam Phillips, VOA News, New York.
And that wraps up this edition of African News Tonight. I'm Kim Lewis in Washington. For all the latest developments on the continent 24/7, visit our website at voaafrica.com. Please stay tuned to Straight Talk Africa, coming up at 18:30 UTC. On behalf of our producer, Bill Workinger, and our engineer, Shogun Chang, thanks for choosing the Voice of America.
Hello, this is Shaka Sali, host of Straight Talk Africa.
On the next Straight Talk Africa, world leaders gather in New York for the 2018 UN General Assembly. The theme of this year's debate, making the UN relevant to all people, discussing the 73rd session of the UN General Assembly on the next Straight Talk Africa.
Tune in Wednesdays at 18:30 UTC right here on VOA Africa.
Border Crossings.
Join host Larry London.
Larry London.
On Border Crossings, VOA's only worldwide music request hour.
Whoa.
Every weekday at 1500 Universal. Tune in for the biggest hits and amazing artists. Win prizes and get the latest news from exclusive celebrity interviews.
Ooh.
Send your requests to Facebook at VOA Larry London, Twitter at Border Crossings, or Instagram at Border Crossings VOA. Or call 202-619-2077 and have your favorite music played to the entire world. Don't miss Border Crossings every weekday at 1500 Universal, only on the Voice of America.
VOA Africa has built a successful, effective social media strategy through Facebook, YouTube, Twitter, and other digital platforms. We are responding to our audience on the African continent and in the global diaspora. We believe in the power of connection and interaction to bring you news that is comprehensive, accurate, and objective. We see the changes in technology as an opportunity to engage with our audiences about the issues that affect them. At VOA Africa, we don't just report the news, we help shape the conversation on the continent. VOA, your trusted source for news and information.